once again, I have a question. How many of you window shop? Nobody? Why do you do it? To see what's out there. Come on, sisters, why do you window shop? To see what's new. Okay. Check the prices. What was that? To get out of the house. Well, that happens too. That's right. Because you're not ready to buy. Someone else was going to say something.
Set goals.
Set goals. All right. You can kind of see a difference. Brother JT mentioned setting goals, and that's, I don't like doing it, but that's me. But sometimes I will, and typically it's because I figure, okay, we're going to need something, so I need to go and see what it's going to cost and see what I can get, and then I got to start setting goals on how I'm going to get there in order to get it. Sometimes I've gone to places and they would tell you, well, you know, the price is getting ready to go up. I don't care. That's all right. Because typically if I go out looking for something, it's going to be out in the future before I get it. So I'm already taking that into account, that it's probably going to be a little more expensive than what I see now. Because I'm looking at it and trying to make plans on how to get to that point. I've seen some go window shopping just because they hope to get it someday. And yet, sometimes I've made the comment, well, why would you go if you don't have any money to buy? But you know, we have people who profess to be saved, and they're window shopping Christians. I've want you to consider, I've run into some, and the reason they're saved is simply that they don't want to go to hell. That's a good reason for being saved, but it's not enough. It won't keep you. And yet, there are some things that we need to do as we go through this life. I want to read a couple of verses out of a couple of songs. Number 292, verse 3, it says, thou hast cleansed me for thy temple, garnished or decorated with thy graces rare. All my soul thou art enriching by thy fullness dwelling there. My question is, why would these graces be rare? Can you help me out with that? They're not common, all right? Anything else? They're not easy to obtain. Anything else? Well, consider what another songwriter said in song number 174, that fourth verse says, in the heated furnace, Father, let me stay. Precious gold refining, purge the dross away. How long? He said, till thy glorious image is reflected there, till the costly jewels of thy grace I wear. The sister said, they're not easily obtainable, and they are not very common, it seems. But why are they so rare? And why are they not so common when every man has access to a common salvation? They should be rare from the standpoint that they are of such high value. They should not be rare because so few people endeavor to possess them. What can you tell me about the graces of God? If somebody asks you what that song meant when it said, "Garnish with thy graces rare," what would you be able to tell them? High priced. Very valuable. God spent a lot, if you will, to purchase them for you and me. And one songwriter said he would bankrupt heaven to meet my need. Consider, the graces of God are the influence or spirit of God operating in man. It is a pleasing or attractive quality or endowment, a virtue of excellence of divine origin, the blessing of God's presence. The writer in the 5th chapter of Galatians, you have heard that many a time, but let's just read it. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Now, I want to share with you what Adam Clark had to say about these graces, the fruit of the Spirit. And I want you to consider how they apply to you. He spoke about love. He said it is an intense desire to please God and to do good to mankind. It is the very soul and spirit of all true religion. He did not pluralize that. The fulfilling of the law, and it is what gives energy to faith itself. Sometimes people say, "Well, Lord, increase my faith." Then may the Lord increase their love. The song was sung and it spoke about joy. The exultation that arises from a sense of God's mercy that is communicated to the soul in the pardon of sin. Doesn't have anything to do with having fun in this life. It is a foretaste of eternal glory that we are able to experience when he cleanses us from all sin. And as we consider it, sometimes people are looking to have fun, and that means things have to go their way, or it has to be pleasing to them in the circumstance and the situation. Joy has to do with us being able to feel an exultation in our heart and soul because I'm saved. They said, saved, saved, saved. You know, there are times when you can be going along in this life and you say, "Lord, I'm just glad I'm saved and delivered." Peace. The calm, quiet, and the order which take place in the justified soul instead of doubts, fears, alarms, and dreadful forebodings, which every true penitent less or more feels and must feel until the assurance of pardon brings peace and satisfaction to the mind. It says peace is the first sensible fruit of the pardon of sin. One of the things I've noted at times, those who have just gotten saved say, "Well, I feel so peaceful." It's the work of the Spirit. Long-suffering, long-mindedness, in other words, bearing with the frailties and provocations of others from the consideration that God has borne long with ours. You forget about that? Some people are provoking, but God dealt with our provocations. He bore with us. And we should bear with others. When we consider that had he not done so, we would have been speedily consumed. It also means bearing up through all the trials and troubles and difficulties of life without murmuring or repining. In other words, the brother said he was glad to be saved. He's never had any regret about being saved. We don't have to repine. And we are to consider that long-suffering also is submitting cheerfully to every dispensation of God's providence and thus deriving benefit from every occurrence. Sometimes I ask the question, what did you get out of it? And sometimes people look at you like, what are you talking about? But we are to get something and gain something from everything that God allows us to go through. Gentleness, benignity, affability, in other words, kindness. And this is what Adam Clark said about this. A very rare grace, often wanting in many who have a considerable share of Christian excellence. And then he made a statement that I'm still pondering. He said, a good education and polished manners, when brought under the influence of the grace of God, will bring out the grace with great effect. A very rare grace, but it should not be. But the way he described it, it can escape those who may be well on their way to living, if you will, a great Christian life. What that tells me is that we should be very careful about this walk and consider from day to day, Lord, where am I with you? What am I with you, and how am I doing in this world? Goodness, the perpetual desire, the continual desire, and sincere study, not only to abstain from every appearance of evil. You ever thought about goodness in that way? To abstain from the appearance of evil? But to do good to the bodies and souls of men, to the utmost of our ability. To the utmost of our ability. And then he mentions faith. And here he says, it is here used for fidelity, punctuality, in performing promises, conscientious carefulness, in preserving what is committed to our trust, in restoring it to its proper owner, in transacting the business confided to us, and then listen to what he says, neither betraying the secret of our friend, nor disappointing the confidence of our employer. You ever thought about faith having to do anything with where you work? But he's saying this is what it means. And you look into this Greek word called pistis. He says it means that we will not betray the secret of our friend. It means that what has been committed to us, we will restore it to its proper owner in the transaction of the business of our life, and we will do so in a proper way. And I thought about that and considered God grants us a measure of faith. We are to restore it to Him in its proper condition. We are, in other words, to exercise it before Him in a way that shows that we believe wholly in Him as we go through this life. So we are to consider these graces. We should ponder why they are so rare and why they are not more on display. And we have a responsibility to exhibit that in this Christian walk of life as we go on in this way. I find sometimes people want to do great things for the Lord. And they get it in mind, I got it. They don't just say it that way, but they get it in their mind, I got to do something. And so you see them set out to try to do it. And they end up getting outside of the will of God. But you know, if a person can exhibit God's grace in their life, others will see it. I am currently working with, we have 4 trainees at our plant. And so sometimes they are put under our jurisdiction. We have to work with them. Sometimes they might say, well, you got this problem to work with today, and you can take these 2 trainees with you. And so you've got them. And Brother Leland, sometimes when we get to talking there after prayer meeting or Sunday service or something, he might ask if I ever met somebody. Well, it just turned out I was talking about a trainee who came to California a few years ago from Detroit, Michigan. And it turns out he had worked with Brother Leland. I haven't told Brother Leland this yet, but he just mentioned it just Monday or Tuesday before I came. This man said that they were in a situation, and Brother Leland has been in a situation where his boss has had it out for him, made things pretty rough for him, ran him through the mill. But this man was there, and he made a comment. He didn't know for a minute that I knew Brother Leland, and then he finally found out, and he said, well, they were in this circumstance, and he was observing Brother Leland while this man was doing the things that he was doing, saying the things that he said. And he said, Brother Leland was so calm. That's peace.
Thank the Lord.
He said he was so respectful. That's gentleness and goodness. Now, I suspect there might have been some times where Brother Leland felt like maybe saying something and doing some things, but none of that ever showed forth or came forth. And so this man said, I watched him, and I was like, how can he deal with this person so humbly? That's the work of the Spirit in a person's life. Now, I don't think Brother Lena knows this man thought that of him. But he did a great work by providing a pure example before him to show him this is what a Christian actually does. And so as you and I go along this way, we are to display it, but there's some work that we have to do. Matthew, the 13th chapter, the 45th and 46th verse says, again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Now, whether you or I want to accept it or not, we are spiritual merchants. We are given the responsibility in this life because we're existing here. We have a duty to buy and sell. And it says here that the kingdom of heaven is described or likened in this way, that a merchant man who is seeking for goodly pearls is out in his daily walk of business, but he's always on the lookout for that which he can buy. I have a friend in Wichita. As he grew up, he learned to restore old cars like Model A's, and anything before earlier than 1920 is what he's looking for. What I found with him is that he will go to different places, swap meets and whatnot, looking for original parts because he wants to restore it to the way it was when it came off of the assembly line. And I've taken note, we were working once at the nuclear plant, which is way out in the country, you might say out in the boonies, but somewhere along the way, he took some back roads to get back home, and he saw this old car sitting out in some farmer's field. He told me when we came back that Monday, and he said, well, I saw this car out in this farmer's field, so when I go home this coming weekend, I'm going to have to stop out there and see if I can find somebody who can tell me who that car belongs to. I want to try to buy it. It wasn't running. It was rusted. But he saw something in it. And what he saw, some people would look at and say, just an old rusty piece of junk. But he saw what he could restore it to. He saw what he could do with it. And so what I'm getting to there is that sometimes these goodly pearls may not look so precious and great to have, but you and I need to be able to see beyond that. Sometimes people don't want somebody to run over them. I'm talking about window shopping Christians now. I've heard people say, well, you don't have to let folks run over you. And I ask him, well, what did the scripture say? He's going to let who run over and ride over your head? I said, now, you need to be careful about who you're going to check, because God may be letting them ride over your head for a reason. But it don't look like a goodly pearl to purchase at that time, does it? It looked like something you don't want any part of, and I'm going to find a way to stop them. But you know something? You might miss a great opportunity in your buying and selling when it comes to that point in time. I've heard some express, well, if they don't come and ask me to forgive them, I don't have to forgive them. I've heard that in Sunday school. I'm talking about people that save now. And then you consider, what did God say about that? What did Jesus tell Peter? He said, if they come and ask you 490 times in one day, you ought to forgive them 490 times. Now, his point was, you ought to have unlimited forgiveness without limitations upon it. I've had some tell me, well, until they come, I don't have to. And I've told them, you can forgive them and they never have to ask you. And I said, and furthermore, if they don't seem to realize or get the point that they did you wrong and they end up dying, are you going to sit here forevermore bound up by not forgiving them? What are you going to do? And then I told him, you know, I learned the lesson the hard way that it's better to forgive them and go on about your business, because when you don't, you're the one that's bound up. I heard a man, and he went to church, but he wasn't saved. But he told me one time we was working there in Wichita, and some of the people we worked with, he said, I hate them. He said, but hating somebody is like you drinking the poison and expecting the other person to die. So that tell you don't make much sense, does it? But sometimes the pearl of forgiveness doesn't look so enticing to buy, because I have to let them go, because I have to humble myself, because I can't sit there and say, who do they think they are doing this to me like I'm somebody? We are to buy and sell as we go along. That's what merchants do. And the things that aren't worth keeping, we should sell off. And the things that are worth buying, it said, this man, when he found the one pearl of great price, he went and sold all that he had. Do you think he didn't give it any kind of consideration? You think he just up and did it? Anybody here, are you willing to take everything you have in your bank account to go buy something right now? One of my daughters wanted some shoes. And she told me what they cost. And, Daddy, I want these shoes. And she described them, and I told her, I'm not paying for those. I'm not buying them. I said, but you have some money in your savings account. If you just have to have them, you can have your mom take you to the bank. You can get the money out of your savings account, and you can go buy them. You know what she told me? Well, then I don't want to buy them. So I looked at her and said, so if I buy them, you want them? But if you have to buy them, you don't want them? Well, yeah. I said, well, then you must not want them very much. And she never did go buy them. You know, sometimes when we consider what God is showing us in our own lives, we don't want to buy. Well, I say window shopping Christians, there are many. I listen to what people say. Now, I'm going to give you an example. I, in times, have heard people say they want a double portion of God's divine love. You really want that? I've known of two different instances, two different people, who saw the example in one of their parents' lives. And they told the Lord, I want a double portion of what they have. But in either case, they said, when the trials and the tests started coming, they decided, well, Lord, maybe I don't want that. I just want what you want me to have. Okay, this is a goodly pearl. Now, this is one where they saw it like, this is something great to have. This is something valuable to have. It's something that man needs in his spiritual walk with God. In this case, it happened to be faith. They wanted faith like their parents had, because their parents seemed to have an ability to pray for people and they would be healed. And you know, I knew one of them, not, I won't say fairly well, but I'd seen her and been around a number of times to where I noticed she was a quiet sister. And yet, most people didn't hardly know her. If you were at a meeting, you wouldn't hardly know she was there. She was quiet. Never heard her shout. Never heard her start another verse of song. But she had something that was a goodly pearl. And though one of her children desired it at first, when they began to meet the trials and tests, then they really wasn't so willing to pay the price. But we're in a time where you and I need to pay some prices. These graces need to be on display. And whether we are old, middle-aged, or young, we need to value what we see and buy it. My wife's uncle once was looking for something, and he said he went to the store living there in Tulsa. He walked in and he said, "You have whatever it was in the display window. I want it." And he's going to buy it for his wife. And they told him, "Well, it costs so much and so much." Almost as if to say, "We don't really know that you can afford this." You know what he told them? "I don't care what it costs. I want it." I said, "That's what I want to buy." So they went and got whatever it was that they had on display. They didn't get the display, but they went and got the same thing, brought it out to him. He bought it and took it home. We are to consider what we find, and I want you to think about it. You're at, right now, the market. This whole meeting is an opportunity, especially for buying and selling as merchant people. Whatever God touches in a person's heart, now it's time to sell and buy. If he says, "I want you to lay this down," or whatever it might be, then we are to lay it down, sell out, and then we are to buy what he would have us to purchase and put in for it and pursue it. And I want you to also consider this question. Some have been saved for some time, some maybe not so long, but in the time that you have been saved, what have you bought when it comes to God's graces? In other words, what grace are you known by? What do you say if I said David, King David in the Bible? What do you remember about him? What was said about him? Nothing? A man of who? A man after God's own heart. Now, he wasn't always following after God. You can't follow God when you're taking somebody else's wife. You can't follow God when you're having them killed. But what it brings out is that when he was confronted, you find that when David stumbled, he always fell towards God. He submitted himself to God. When the prophet came and said, "Oh, King, let me tell you a story," he said, "Say on." And he told him about this man who had one little ewe lamb, and how somebody came along and took it and served it to their friends that came to visit them. And David got pretty irate about it, said, "Whoever done this is going to pay for it. I'm going to take care of them." And then the prophet said, "Thou art the man. You're the one that did this." He didn't say, well, Nathan, you don't understand." He just humbled himself down. And when the Lord began to let him know where his judgment was going to come from, he said, "Put me in the hands of the Lord." And he went at it that way. Yeah. What do you know about Job? Give me one word to describe him.
Patience.
That's the grace he's known by. Yeah. What about Abraham? Faith. What about Ruth? Faithfulness. Fidelity, commitment. What about the Apostle Paul? Don't stop. Sacrifice, steadfastness. He said, "I gave up all things and counted them loss for Christ." What about Moses? The meekest man, they say, that ever lived. He had a whole lot of opportunities to exercise in meekness, didn't he? Dealing with them stiff-necked, hard-headed children of Israel. And he said, Lord, I didn't ask for this burden. You put this on me. And they, if I could use the word, disrespected him many a time. Even his brothers and sisters, you're not the only one to get something from God. We can get it too. God had to step in and tell him, I talk to him face to face. I speak to you in an indirect way. What about Jeremiah? You ever thought about Jeremiah? What was he called? The weeping prophet. What does that tell you about him? He had compassion for his people. He was known for that. What about Noah? Perseverance. All them years of building that ark and telling them it's going to rain, and it had never, ever rained in man's history. You think he had a lot of ridicule? Huh? You think people would come by there, that old crazy man out there building a boat talking about it's going to rain. What does rain mean? We ain't never seen no rain. Everything the Bible says was watered from underneath. And this man is talking about it's going to rain. What about Mary, the mother of Jesus? Submission. And I will call it meditation. It says she pondered these things in her heart. When she saw Jesus doing some things, she pondered them in her heart. And I believe even while she saw him dying upon the cross, she was still pondering how this will work out. Simeon and Anna, what do you remember about them? Faithfulness. Anna was daily in the temple praying, fasting. Simeon. Lord, I want to see your salvation. And he kept looking for it. And he was there. When he saw it, he said, I can go now and die in peace. You have others. Daniel, what do you see in Daniel? Courage. What was that? Dedication. Anything else? Commitment. Prayerful. And a perfect life. You heard Brother Donnie mention about him last night, how did he live through several kingdoms. And you know, in all of that time, by the time he was put in the den of lions, they say he was around 90 years old. So in all of that time, they had a long time to watch this man's life, and they couldn't find any fault. Does his life challenge you? How does it challenge you? Well, it challenges me in this way. And I've had to remind home folks sometimes, because I've heard them say, well, you see, back in the Old Testament time, they didn't have the Holy Spirit dwelling in them to help them live. And I said, well, if that's the case in the way that you're saying it, and this man lived the life he lived where they couldn't find any fault in him, Enoch lived in such a way that God said, come on up here, boy, I want you to be with me. Noah lived in such a way that when there wasn't anybody left, you could just say, you live here in this city of Dallas, what they call Dallas proper, and what if there was only about 8 of you saved and everybody else is unsaved? Or in Noah's case, let's just say there's only about 8 of you saved and the rest of the world is unsaved. Would you still be able to go on? Would you still exhibit the grace that God has for man to display? We ought to be merchants in spiritual things, not spiritual talk. I've seen that. You know, you can do a whole lot of talking spiritually and never say a word. The songwriter said, let a holy life tell the gospel story. And we are to do that as we go on in this way. Each one of these, now, the Bible lets us know that these were people who were men and women just like we are. And yet they were known by something. Now, they weren't all renowned where everybody around, you know, David was king. All the other nations knew who he was. Not everybody's like that. But what you see is that they were who they were. In the time they lived, they were buying and selling. And when they found, look at Ruth. When she found a pearl of great price, she herself sold all. She left her family. She left her religion. She left all that she had there in her homeland, and she went to a land where they were prejudiced against her. She went to a land where there was no guarantee at all that she would be treated well and received well. She went to a land where she didn't know where the next meal was coming from. She didn't go there thinking, well, I'm going to go with Naomi and she's going to hook me up with somebody. That wasn't why she went there. She had no guarantee. And if you look as to how they explain the conversation between Naomi and Ruth and what they call the Targum, which would be somewhat like what we call a commentary today, they say in that conversation what they believe was that Naomi was explaining to her, you're saying you're going to go with me, but we have certain things, rules, I'll say, that we have to live by. And so she let them know that we have certain feasts we follow and certain things we do. And she let her know, your people are going to be my people. And we have certain things where if you don't follow these rules, your life can be taken. Well, wherever you die, I will die. You go on and look into that. And she's explaining to her that, well, we only serve one God. And we have to serve him in a certain way. And we make sacrifices. And we do all of these things. She said, your God will be my God. And so, Naomi had to quit talking to her because she had bought the pearl of great price. She didn't know she was going to be a part of Jesus Christ's lineage. She ended up being, if I remember correctly, she ended up being David's great or great-great-grandmother. She didn't know that that was going to happen. But she bought into, I see something in this mother-in-law's life. It doesn't say much about Naomi, but it's a challenge to mother-in-laws to be not what people typically think. And I have one that isn't what people typically think. And I've had the privilege. I remember once we were sitting at work at lunchtime and some of the men at the table got to talking about their mother-in-laws. And they just kind of started going around the table, each one saying something. And they got to another man. His name was Alfred Brown. And when they come to him, he looked at me and he said, Phil, I said, yeah. He said, we don't know nothing about that, huh? I said, no, we sure don't. He said, because I get along good with my mother-in-law. I said, I know what you mean. I do too. Well, one of them even asked me one time, they knew we would go on vacation. They said, well, where are you going this year? And I said, well, we're going to the meeting in California and we're going to go see this and go see that and go see the other. And how long are you going to be gone? For 2 weeks. And I don't know why. He said, well, who's going with you? I said, well, it's going to be me and my wife and the family, my sister and her two children, and my mother-in-law. He looked at me and said, you're what? I said, my mother-in-law. You're going to be gone 2 weeks in a car with your mother-in-law? I said, yeah. And I was like, is that strange? With your mother-in-law? I said, yeah. Me and my mother-in-law get along fine. Naomi was that to Ruth, and she saw something, and she said, wherever you going, Mom, I'm going. Wherever you live and die, that's where I'm going to be. I have seen the pearl, and I'm going to buy it and give up all I have to get it. What kind of shopping do you do? You just window shop? In other words, when God deals with us, do you really purchase that patience you need when he points it out? Do you really purchase that gentleness that will cause you to do good even to your enemies? You know, I say this because I heard somebody say one time, well, if somebody saved, but if they ain't doing right, then I don't have to do them like the Bible said. I can go get me an attorney and do this and that and other. What did the Bible say? Do good unto your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Pray for them that despitefully use you. Now, how are you going to pray for them? How are you going to pray for them, Lord? Get them. Lord, do them in. You see they was bothering me, Lord. Well, I told you I learned to forgive. I've told this before. I had an occasion where I worked, I was on salary. So when you worked overtime, you was just free. But we were going to work at the nuclear plant. And so everybody that was going up there was going to get paid for their overtime. And so I told my wife, says, well, we're supposed to be up there for 6-7 weeks. And the first check I get, I'm going to have some overtime money on it. And said, if it's all right with you, I'd like to give that money to my mother so she can do whatever she wants to with it. She can go. My mother used to like wearing hats when she went to church. Now, she didn't have these gaudy-looking hats. But she liked wearing her hats to church. So I said, she can go buy an outfit and get a hat to match and purse to match if she wants. Or she can take the money and pay off some bills, whatever she wants to do with it. She said, that's fine. So I'm up there working. And after about 2 weeks, I didn't know it at the time, but the day shift and the night shift supervisor, and I was on night shift, were feuding with each other. And come to find out, the night shift supervisor was writing things in the journal to try to make it look like the day shift people were messing things up, and he was having to straighten up all their mess. Well, that wasn't really true. What we also found out, in that case, supervisors talks to supervisor during the shift change. I'm the engineer on night. There's an engineer on days. The one I was talking about finding the car out there, this was during that time when he found the car out in the farmer's field. Well, him and I talk with each other. See, he says, well, this is what I was working on, so you can pick up at this point. Here's what you need to watch out for, so forth and so on. Well, when we were finishing up our shift at 3 or so in the morning, we would just write in the journal, here's what we were doing, so they could read it. But when this man, he took it upon himself to write down everything for everybody. So you just told him, and he write it down. Well, we didn't know what all was going on. And then when we finally began to figured out, well, we thought, well, there's something going on, but we still didn't know the depths of it. So I make a determination. They were wanting to come in at 3 in the morning, sit in the hotel room and drink beer. And I told them, I don't drink beer. They said, oh, you can come anyway and drink 7-Up. I did that one time, and I said, this ain't working for me. You drink this pop and then try to go to sleep. That does not work. So I finally figured, if I wait an hour, I can go eat breakfast with the day shift guys. They'll go on into work, and I'll come back and crawl in my hotel room and go to sleep. So I was doing that, but as we were doing that, they would ask me, well, what did you guys do last night? What were you working on? Well, we did this, and we did that, and watch out for this. This was a problem, and we held us up for several hours, and we finally figured out how to get that going, or watch out for how you put this together, and so forth and so on. Well, they were finding out through me what they needed to find out. I still didn't know what was going on. When the night shift supervisor finally found out what I was doing, he came to me and said, I understand you eat breakfast with the day shift guys. Oh, yeah. I was working on some stuff and just kind of talking and working. And he said, traitor. And he turned around and walked off. And I stood up and turned around and looked at him, and I thought, if I didn't know no better, I'd think he was serious. I thought, well, ain't nothing, you know. I didn't know anything was going on. At the end of that, he comes and tells me, well, on Monday, you don't have to come back. You can report in to the normal workplace. And I was like, oh, okay. How did that change? Because I was supposed to be there for 6 or 7 weeks. I've only been there for 3. And in the midst of that, I was doing something they call stretching the bolts on the low-pressure turbine, which means simply that you heat these bolts up and you have the mechanic tighten the nuts where he's actually stretching this bolt that's about this big around and about that long. And you actually put a few thousandths of an inch of stretch on them so that when they cool off, they pull everything down so tight so there's no steam coming out of the turbine when you run it. Now, I got about halfway in what I had to do. And now it's time for me to go home. So I tell the night shift supervisor, I stopped on bolt number so-and-so. I've stretched it so many thousands of an inch. It needs to be stretched so many more thousands. Then when they finish that, they will go to bolt number such and such, because there's a certain pattern you have to follow all the way around this. And I'm telling them the next one they have to go to so they can pick up the pattern and keep going. I come into work on Monday morning, and the Lord tells me, you need to call Mike. And I'm sitting there in my office, start thinking, well, I don't need to call them. They've already been in at work since 4 o'clock in the morning, and this is 7:30, and by now they done seen what I did, and they done moved on. And then it comes back to me again, you need to call Mike. I'm like, well, why do I need to do that? So finally I pick up my phone, I punch in the number, and I call him, and he answers the phone. I said, Mike, did you all see where I left off and you doing okay? He said, we just now figured out what you did. It took them 3.5 hours to figure it out. I said, well, what was put in the journal? He said, well, let me read it to you. He read it. I said, that's not what I told Kurt. He wrote it in a way to confuse him on purpose. And then Mike tells me, I'm sorry you got sent home. You got sent home because of me. And I'm like, huh? And he said, you don't know what's going on, do you? And then he explained to me. Now I got a problem. This man has knocked me out of over $1,000 because of his jealousy. I don't appreciate people messing with my money, especially when I was going to give it to my mother. And so I'm going to tell you how I felt. Brother Donnie talk about being real. I thought, you know what? I ought to take him back out in the North 40 here and do a tap dance on his head. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking about doing it with these. Like, I didn't appreciate that. And I got calls from some of the others, like, where you at? I said, well, I'm not back anymore. I was the only one got sent home. And I found out one of the other bosses there got upset about it, and they said he was cursing. Because once they found out what he was doing, not only did he knock me out, but he could affect everybody with what they were doing or what he was doing. And I even had people telling me once they came back, well, you ought to go talk to the boss, and you ought to do this. And I said, no, I'll pick my own fight. And he come along, and I was on this end of the building, and my other partner's on the other end, and he gets on the phone, and he calls me and says, Kurt's coming. Okay. So I just keep working on what I'm doing at my desk, and here he comes, and he says, how's Paul? Fine. I keep working. I don't look up. I don't turn around. I'm just going to keep working. He stands there for a while, and he tries to ask me another question. I give him another one-word, four-letter answer. And then later, the Lord says, you're going to have to forgive him. And I'm like, Lord, I ain't done nothing to that man. He did something to me. He said, I know it, but you're going to have to forgive him. But, Lord, I ain't done anything to him. He said, and if you don't, then I won't forgive you. Oh, now, I really got a big problem now. So you know what I had to do? Got up from the desk, walked out into that North 40 and went to praying. All right, Lord, I'm in a situation here where you ain't going to forgive me, and I can't function that way, so I'm going to forgive him. And now I got to have a different attitude, so the next time he comes and says, I'm doing fine, Kurt, how are you? Well, I got something I want you to do. Okay, what you got? What's the drop dead date as to when I need to have it done? And you go on about your business. You know, some of these pearls are costly. Not just in a way of money. But they're costly in what we're going to have to give up of ourselves in order to purchase them and have this grace on display in our lives. And you know, it stood me in good stead because once I, as my brother say, you got to get over the hump. Once I got over that hump, from then on, I've had other people do things to me. I had somebody write me a letter one time, dressing me down about something that happened when I was growing up under my daddy's roof, obeying him. And they was holding me accountable for it for over 15 years. So I went with them, took the letter, Started going through it line by line. Said, this here happened when I was at home. I was obeying my daddy. He taught us to do such and such. And you know what it had to do? It had to do with us being singers and singing. And finally they said, I want you to, when they begin to say, I want you to forgive me. I said, I already had. They said, how can you do that if I haven't asked? I said, I've just been taught by the Lord. I said, I forgave you when I read this letter. I said, I can't stay there and be bound up till you say, forgive me. I done learned from him, soon as something happened, forgive and move. Keep going. And when they come back and say, will you forgive me? I already have. They look at you funny like, what do you mean? I already have. I got to keep going. I done bought one of those pearls, and I have to keep going. And I can't let it get away from me, because I found out it'll cause me to be in a bad situation where I'll be bound up spiritually, and I can't be that way. You know, as you go along in this life, each one of you, each one of us should be noted for something. Somebody needs to be noted for their love. Somebody else for their compassion. Somebody for their patience. And yet all of us need to have a measure of them. I did something once when I was in Wichita teaching Bible study. And I looked at several characters in the Bible and wrote down some of their characteristics. And then I told them, now, I'm going to read this group of characteristics off, and you tell me who this person is. And I said, and they're all Bible characters. And so I read off some characteristics of David, and they thought it was Paul. I read off characteristics of Paul, and they thought that was Peter. They only got like maybe one or two of them right on the first guess, I'll say. And then I told them, I said, now, this set of characteristics I read, this is this Bible character. This one is that Bible character. This one is another Bible character. But now what do you get from all of that? I did the same thing in a different setting out there in Pacoma, and it was the same thing. Well, that's so-and-so. No, that's not him. Well, that's so-and-so. No, that's not him. And then I began to tell them who they were. And I said, here's the point in all of it. You can read the character of Paul and think it's John or somebody else. You can read about Peter and think it's someone else. You can read about Mary and think it's someone else. I said, what it really shows you is that all of them, when you look at them as children of God, you get them mixed up because they all exhibit some of the same characteristics. But yet some of them were known, if you will, specifically of some grace that they had in their life. Steadfast faithfulness, compassion and love, faith for in God or whatever it might have been. But along with that were many other graces. It was just that there was one or two that they stood out for. You and I should be the same way. Somebody should be able to describe Sister Serena, and you might think it's Sister Sharon. Somebody should describe Brother Durrell, and they may think that's Brother Donnie. Because every child of God, if they're going to be a merchant and they buy and sell, spiritually speaking, ought to take on some of these graces and have them working in their lives. And some of them ought to excel. And yet, as you look upon it, each one of us, as you've heard it said, are different. But there is something about our personality. There is something about our bent. There is something about our affections to where God can utilize certain graces that can excel in our lives. But we have to buy. We have to be like the merchant. We have to value them. And, you know, he valued it to the extent that, all right, I'm going to go sell everything I have to get all the money amassed that I can get. And then I'm going to go to this person and find out who has this field. And I'm going to buy this field so I can get that one pearl. What are you buying and what are you selling? May the Lord help us to consider it. And, you know, when we come to these meetings, the sister last night said she was excited. Well, are you excited? I remember as a child, my mother would take us downtown. We'd ride the bus. And she would take one child on a Friday. Next Friday, she'd take a different child. But we was all excited when we had the chance to go. And there were certain things that I still remember, like going to a place called Cress's. And you could smell them roasted peanuts outside, and she'd buy Spanish peanuts. Like, couldn't wait to get there to get your hands on some of them peanuts. might go to Woolworths and get a root beer. But you know, as you go along the way, you remember those things. You'll remember the places you've been in when you purchase those graces. And when he deals with us, when his spirit says, you need to be more loving.
Yes.
All right, it's time for me to go and buy.
Yes.
And to allow it to exercise itself in my life.
Yes.
And as the brother said last night, you're going to get plenty of opportunity to show love. Going to get plenty of opportunity to have patience. Plenty of opportunities to be meek. And you'll hear people say, well, you don't have to let them do you that way. Well, do you? Some people, when it comes to trusting God, well, you don't have to do that. You can do this. Do you? You know, sometimes we do have to if we're going to purchase these costly jewels. If we're going to have these rare graces in our lives. And you know, as you look upon it, you can consider some other examples. When Stephen was being stoned, what did he say? Huh? Lay not this sin to their charge. Now, you think about this. When they were stoning him, they wasn't just picking up rocks and throwing them at him. Some writer says when it came to stoning, what they would do is take them to a place outside the city, but to a precipice, and they push them off, and they're expecting the fall to kill them. And if it doesn't, then they take big boulders and they toss them and drop them off on them, and that's how they kill them. And he said, lay not this sin to their charge. You think he bought some spiritual graces before he got to that point? Because you can't buy them in a moment's notice. You think about the Apostle Paul when they stoned him. You remember what it said he did? Nobody remember? When they stoned Paul. He said he got up and he went right back into the city of the people that stoned him and kept preaching to them. You think he has some compassion? Has some love? Has some gentleness to do good to all men, to their souls and their bodies? And he went back and kept preaching God's word to them. You look at Mary, Martha's sister, and Jesus told Martha, Mary hath chosen the good part. She's a merchant right here, Martha, and she's buying at my feet. And that's what you and I are supposed to do as we go through this Christian walk. Now, you don't seek God for a grace in your life and say, I'm going to excel in faith, or I'm going to excel in compassion or love. What you do is you respond to God as he deals with you. You let him work that grace in your life. And in the circumstances of life, he'll bring the excellence to where others can say when they hear about you, well, I know something of that person. To the extent when someone says something bad about them, they can say, I know that person. And I know that's not them. And if they did do what you said, I also know that they're going to come back to you and they're going to straighten that up when God deals with them. The graces are rare. But it's because too many are just window shopping. I see it, I want it, but I don't want to pay that much for it. And therefore they don't put in for it because they think it's too much. But if you and I can begin to assess the value, when he spoke of those merchant men, he said when they would buy, he speaks of them being sincere. And it brings it out that when the merchant man was looking for materials, he would hold the material up in the sky, up to the sun, and he's looking for flaws in that material. And if he doesn't find flaws, then he'll buy it. And what it brings it out, what it's saying there is that you and I are to live in this life in such a way that when God holds
the graces that we contain up to his spiritual light, the Holy Spirit, he won't find any flaws. What have you bought since you've been saved? In other words, what graces rare are working within? You make that determination, but let God help us each one to buy as we should and to sell that which we don't need as we go this way. And I give you one other thing to think about. I saw this written on a board not too long ago. It said, he is no fool who will give up what he cannot keep and will gain that which cannot be taken away. God's graces are those that can't be taken away. But the things we hold on into this life, we're going to give them up. We can't take them with us. And most of them we'll lose before we ever have that last breath. Pray for me.